today, a new episode of Why Football Happens. And on Thursday, the 26th of August, there's only one thing we could really focus on: the Champions League group stage draw. It took place this Thursday evening, and straight after the draw had been finished, myself and Paul McDonald got on the microphones to have a look at what's coming up potentially in the group stage this season. Normally, the Champions League draw is a bit of an anti-climax, I personally think, because we end up just eyeing the groups and saying, well, that's the two that are going through, that's the two that are going through. Maybe there's one group that has a potential banana skin in it. But you've already said just before we started this podcast, this, for once, is an interesting Champions League draw for the group stage. Talk to me why.
It is, yeah. I do think that maybe it could be one of the more weak pot fours that we've ever had, just with some of the teams that have qualified. But I think some of those groups are very interesting. I mean, poor Club Bruges, stuffed in at the bottom of Leipzig, PSG and City. I wouldn't want to be them in that group stages. But I do think the addition of Leipzig to that section is an intriguing one. Does make it very, very interesting. Like, Leipzig have obviously given teams hassle in the past and have a good side and will be among the contenders for the Bundesliga again this season. And with those two giants, who will obviously or could take points off each other, which could give Leipzig an opportunity to sneak in the back door. So that's a really interesting little trifecta of those three teams. And I'm keen to see how that one plays out. Obviously, City's performances in Europe have got much better of late than they were previously, when they were more prone to slipping up, particularly at the group stage level, than perhaps other established sides. But the presence of those three teams in the one section is very interesting to me, and it's good to see that we've got some competitive games for some of these teams at the group stage. And I don't really see a group there where I could completely, maybe Group H, maybe Chelsea and Juve, given the poor situation of Russian football at the moment. I'm hearing quite a lot from people I respect that the Russian Premier League is at its lowest ebb than it's been for quite a while. And I don't think much is expected of Zenit, and I think Malmo, fantastic for them to make it, but I think they're happy to be there. I think that looks like a group that's already pretty much cut and dried for the big two to go through. But if I look at the rest of them, I think there's opportunities for slip-ups and opportunities for competitive games. So as much as the format allows it, I think it's a pretty decent draw.
Well, if you haven't seen the draw yet, let's just quickly: Manchester City, PSG, Leipzig and Club Brugge in Group A. Group B is Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, Porto and Milan. Group C, Sporting Lisbon, Borussia Dortmund, Ajax and Beşiktaş. Group D, Inter Milan, Real Madrid, Shakhtar Donetsk and Sheriff Tiraspol. Then we have Group E with Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Benfica, Dinamo Kiev. Group F, Villarreal, Manchester United, Atalanta and Young Boys. Group G, Lille, Sevilla, Red Bull, Salzburg and Wolfsburg. And Group H, as you mentioned, Chelsea, Juventus, Zenit, St. Petersburg and Malmo. I suppose from running through them, Group B is without a doubt the most stellar group to watch, in probably in terms of competitive games and interesting games for every fan of football throughout that group stage.
I would agree completely with that, mate. I think there's a really competitive group from all four teams. Like generally in Champions League draws, you see a lot more Group H's and Group G's. So the Group H is the Chelsea Juventus group, which are heavily stacked with the big two sides, and then two smaller, weaker sides underneath them. And then you see a lot more Group G's, which has got Lille and Sevilla, Salzburg and Wolfsburg. A very competitive group in its own right, but all of the teams are maybe a level down. Whereas that Group B has got stellar names in it and should offer really competitive competition for all of them, hopefully, to the end of the match day. Obviously, Milan were the big fish in pot four, the team that nobody really wanted to get out of that section, and them slotting in there. In fairness, I think a few of the other groups, if they'd slotted in it as well, it would have made them very interesting and made them almost that de facto group of death. But the way that they've slotted in and the style of play that they've got, that should be a very interesting group. And all in all, it's a bit strange, mate, because as much as I denigrate modern football, I am quite looking forward to this group stage now, because it does look as if there's a few games that will catch my eye.
I have to say, I was worried, because the last time we spoke about modern football, I walked away from it basically looking around and wondering if there was any point in watching it anymore, because we were talking about the Messi transfer. But actually, there's one big transfer that may be taking place, and there are rumours certainly coming out of a few places around Europe that Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be moving to Manchester City imminently from Juventus. I haven't seen it's been confirmed yet at all, but that is the conversation that's coming out, particularly from places like Bleacher Report. And then you have Manchester City against Paris Saint-Germain in the same group with Lionel Messi. So we suddenly get thrown in together into the mix in the Champions League group stage, a Messi versus Ronaldo scenario once again. I mean, it's an intriguing talking point coming out of that group. And also the future of Kylian Mbappe as well is still up in the air with Real Madrid's move earlier this week. So Group A, fantastic, I think, with City, PSG, and as you mentioned, Leipzig. You feel, as I say, sorry for Club Brugge. Group B is awesome. You've got the narrative of Liverpool and Milan, of course, with their recent history in the Champions League. Atletico Madrid are a wonderful side, the reigning Spanish champions. Porto, obviously, always considered a bit of a wild card of how far they can go. Group C, Sporting Lisbon, a side that generally underperform. And I have to say, Group C, looking at it, you'd think Borussia Dortmund to top that group, but then it's fairly wide open between the Portuguese side, Ajax, and possibly Besiktas as well, to nick that second spot. And they're second and third for the Europa League, of course, in that third spot. I think anybody underneath Borussia Dortmund can take that in Group C. And that should be some entertaining football and maybe a chance as well to see some players from Sporting, Ajax and Besiktas kind of put their name on the European stage and make an impact.
Yeah, I can't claim to say that I watch much Primera Liga, but I have heard great reports about Sporting last season. I do watch a bit more Eredivisie, and I have to say that Ajax's recent record in the competition obviously speaks for itself. They went through like in a transitional period earlier in the last decade where they had rebounded from the Snyder Van der Vaart generation quite badly, and they looked ill-equipped to deal with that level. But I think that this team have got some real talent. Obviously, the conveyor belt continues to move forward. Ryan Gravenberch, potentially one of the superstars of the future in central midfield. They've also got Sebastian Haller, which they brought back there from West Ham, who's scoring goals. Dusan Tadic is still there. So they have got experience as well as that young crop of excellent talent too. So I think, in my eyes, they'll be the team that be looking to join Dortmund in the next round. But again, it's like it's Group C and Group G are kind of that weird Champions League group get sometimes where all the teams are on a similar level. Maybe you wouldn't expect it to be really box office, but it should lead to a selection of competitive games. And sometimes that's all you can really ask for. Like, keep the groups competitive and keep them something to play for going into the last match days, because I think 15 out of the 16 teams last season were the 15 highest ranked or the 15 top two seeds in each section, I believe, all qualified for the knockout stages. And I think that was replicated the year before as well. So, yeah, you want something to shake up that predictability. And I think some of these groups have the potential to do it.
The next group as well, further down the list, with Inter, Real Madrid, the wild card again, that's always Shakhtar Donetsk, who always seem to have a crop of young Brazilians or perhaps older Brazilians as well that seem to make an impact on the European stage. And of course, they have gone through, they have like an ebb and flow situation with the Champions League, I always find. They're either completely out of it and end up being a whipping boy, the Ukrainian side, or they end up being able to cause a lot of problems for these big sides. When you think about what Inter are going through right now, with obviously losing Conte, losing Lukaku as well. I mean, they started brilliantly on the opening day of the Serie A season, and a 4-0 victory over Genoa looks awesome. But, I mean, I think Hakan Çalhanoğlu has sold his soul to the devil to be able to score that goal, because he didn't score one of those in a Milan shirt for about 100 attempts in the last couple of years of his time there. But Inter, there's a question mark about how they're going to play this season and how powerful they can be, particularly on the European stage. Real Madrid will look at that group and see top spot, I think. And then if they do hold on to Lautaro Martinez, maybe there is a chance for them to compete with Real Madrid. If not, it could get a little dicey between them and Shakhtar potentially.
Well, I mean, it can't get much worse for Inter in terms of their recent Champions League record. It flat out sucks. So, I mean, group stage elimination the last twice at least, I think. Since their Jose Mourinho run in 2010, they haven't really made much of a dent in this competition. So anything, getting out of the group stages would be an achievement for them. And I think, yeah, a lot was made of obviously Lukaku and his goals last season and Hakimi leaving as well, and obviously the coach. But winning breeds winners, and there's still a lot of them there at the club. So I wouldn't expect him to immediately suffer a drop-off. And I mean, you watch a lot more Serie A than I do, mate, but there's a lot of respect out there for Simone Inzaghi. And I think people like him as a coach, and people think that he can get his ideas put in place. And like you say, if they don't lose anybody else, Calhanoglu's a smart signing. Zeko might be old now, but he's still going to get you goals, particularly at European level. So there's still a competitive team there. And like I say, if that team can get out of the groups, it represents progress based on some of their previous pretty underperforming campaigns.
And I think as well, for Inter, I mean, as we spoke about throughout the Euros, the defence, the core of the team and the defensive line of the team are very strong indeed, with a mixture of young and old. I mean, I absolutely adore the centre-back, Alessandro Bastoni. Milan Skriniar as well has really looked good the last couple of years in Italian football. You know, they've got Ranocchia, the kind of slightly older head, to bring some experience in there. Matteo Darmian, Stefan de Vrij, of course, the Dutchman. The Inter side is healthily stacked to at least be a very difficult team to break down. And as you say, you know, Dzeko, I think, goes under the radar because he was at Roma, and Roma haven't been that impactful on the European stage in the last few years. But as a goal scorer, Edin Dzeko hasn't lost that finishing touch at all. And again, if the chemistry comes with the Argentinian Lautaro Martinez, you know, there's a great possibility. Real Madrid, yeah, as I say, they will look to, as they always do, look to go through that. Have a quick look at Group E. Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Benfica and Dinamo Kiev. I mean, nobody likes these, in the same way with Shakhtar Donetsk, nobody likes these long trips to the Ukraine, particularly Barcelona flying right the way across Europe on a midweek to try and get a result away from home, possibly in the middle of winter as well, which is always a problem too. This is an entertaining group once more that sees obviously two sides that will fancy their chances to go and win it in Bayern Munich and Barcelona. And you wouldn't bet against Bayern at least making a push to minimum to the semi-finals this year.
Well, I think both of them are quite vulnerable at the moment for obvious different reasons. Which might give Benfica a chance. I think Benfica have spent a fair bit of money this summer, knocked out a really good PSV side to get here. And I think that there is potential for a banana skin in this group. Barcelona are still finding themselves, shall we say. It's all very well Barcelona knocking four past Real Sociedad at home, but it's quite another going away to Athletic and producing the type of away performance where Messi might have bailed them out in the past. And it's not happening anymore, and they're having to find different ways to win, which is not a bad thing for them. I don't think that the much-discussed demise of Barcelona is quite as bad as people are making out. There's still world-class football players there. Let's not kid ourselves. World-class guys who might have been living in the shadow of Messi for too long and basically allowed him to take centre stage and drift into the shadows a little bit. Guys like Griezmann and someone like Memphis Depay, I don't think he's as good as he thinks he is, and I don't think he is as good as the general perception of him is as a footballer. I think he's got a lot of weaknesses, but he's not the type of guy who's going to stand back and let others do the work. He's there to step up and to be counted, and that's kind of what Barcelona needs right now. So there is that transitioning happening at Barca. I think there is a similar transitioning happening at Bayern at a different level when you talk about Nagelsmann as a coach and how he wants that team to play and how they've started the season far from flying away at Mönchengladbach and then struggling to get past Köln at the weekend. So I think they're still trying to find themselves. How quickly these teams can get going this season remains to be seen. If they can start to hit the ground running in the next month or so, by the time poor Dynamo Kiev rock up, then it could be a cricket score. But I think that these teams are in such a degree of transition right now that Benfica, certainly more so than Dynamo Kiev, will be looking at that thinking, yeah, we can take some points here and try and do something in this group.
Well, the worrying thing for Bayern Munich, of course, is that they were a side last season that were unable to defend time and time again, constantly being caught out, and they then lose, albeit, you know, a very experienced Jerome Boateng to the point of perhaps being a little too old this summer. And they lose David Alaba, who is one of the most versatile defenders in that he can play pretty much anywhere he wants in the back line and be moved into midfield and further up the pitch on the flanks too. And those are two really experienced defenders that at times last season when Bayern were struggling defensively, really helped to anchor, provide a great bit of depth and experience, as I say, and hold things down at the back. And they haven't really replaced them with anybody of great significance, I would say. So they are relying on basically the core defence from last year that wasn't very good. Going forward, they're going to find goals. They've got plenty of talent and quality, both young and old, and obviously the delicious speed and delivery of the likes of Serge Gnabry and Leroy Sané. But it's the defensive, much like the Germany international team, it's that defensive back line that I just worry about. And as I keep on saying, if you can defend well, you can go as far as you kind of want to in these tournaments. If you're based about all about attack and outscoring opposition, I don't think it has the same lengthy value in a season and in a competition like the Champions League.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. And I think looking at Bayern's transfer activity or lack thereof, I think Bayern just don't want to get sucked into this kind of weird Swedo market right now, where there is a market for £100 million players and then not really much else underneath. It's like this kind of strange summer where a lot of teams have chosen to kind of sit this one out, and we'll maybe revisit it in January or next summer once the financial situation is established. Because let's face it, I mean, people might be getting vaccinated, but there's still potential for countries to lock down. There's still potential for governing bodies to turn around and say, actually, no, you can't have fans back in this season. And that's the equivalent of a death sentence for some of these clubs. Mm-hmm. So I think that they are being frugal in the market, and I think Bayern have been smart to do so. But it's going to cost them in terms of personnel in the short term, because we know that they need people in. And I think Bayern are taking a noble stand by saying we're not going to spend stupid money on these players. And I think they also have been, to a degree, burned by the Leroy Sané situation. They had a clear wage structure there, which in order to get Sané, they kind of blew it apart. And I don't think it's went down too well within the squad, and certainly not with the support, given that some of the reactions of the fans in the past few matches of his below par performances. So that's a club that's not having to go searching for its issues right now. We know that about Barca. Benfica have certainly had their issues in the past, but they've spent well in the summer, looked good in those games against PSV. And I think if there was any one of those top seeds or teams you would expect to make the knockouts, I'd be looking at that group and thinking, Benfica have got a real chance here to take a scalp.
It'd be interesting to see if the Portuguese side can live up to their huge reputation. And as I say, the Dinamo Kiev curveball of the long trips away in the midweek to the Ukraine might just be a problem for three of those sides, Bayern Munich, Barcelona and Benfica. Group F, just quickly then. I mean, Villarreal impressed, I think, against Chelsea in the UEFA Super Cup, albeit it is the pre-season friendly, the charity shield, if you will, of UEFA tournaments. Do they have longevity in this group with a Manchester United side that has gone out and spent, brought in a quality forward in Jadon Sancho? There seems to be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I was listening to a couple of interviews with various journalists from The Athletic about what Solskjaer is trying to do and create a very fluid front line for Manchester United. They've also brought in Raphael Varane at the back to anchor down things with Harry Maguire, which personally I love Varane. I think he's a wonderful centre-back who can do pretty much everything. And then you've got Atalanta, who are the team that just keep on churning out results and impressing everybody without spending much money. They still turn a profit. They're a really well-organised club. Giampiero Gasperini has a team that knows the exact way they want to play football, and they find people to fit the holes. They don't try and force square pegs into round holes or anything like that with the way they set up their side. So do Villarreal have a chance to get through this group after being so impressive, obviously, last year in the UEFA Europa League as well?
It's a difficult one.
It's tough, isn't it?
It's a tough group, and also they are a team that consistently overperforms, and they haven't had a great start to the season. They've drawn 0-0 at home to Granada on opening day of the season, and then they drew again at the weekend against Espanyol. Dani Parejo has been injured at the start of the season, and I don't think he's due back for another month or so. They have had problems going forward. They are in the process of bringing in Danjuma from Bournemouth, who looks like a real player and should give them attacking options on the flanks. But it's difficult to see them being able to compete on all fronts again. The squad just isn't really big enough for that. And that's the main concern, and that's what's always been the concern with Villarreal. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're no strangers to playing in Europe. They've been in Europe pretty much every season, apart from one or two in the past 10, 15 years. So they are used to competing mainly on the Europa League on a Thursday and La Liga at the weekend. But I do worry that this season could be the one where the lack of real squad depth could come and bite them. And a lot of what Villarreal are able to do is how they can bring through players and replace them from the youth team. I don't see too much hints of that at the moment. So it could be a tough group for them. Don't get me wrong, at full strength, they've got a great side, one that can compete, one that has competed certainly with Man United in the Europa League final and obviously with Chelsea in the Super League. So they clearly have talent. But once you get into that deeper group stages and then you've had an international break and you're into the heart of the season at that point, do they have the depth of squad to challenge United? I think that they should be looking at Atalanta and thinking to themselves, can we get through a second tier? Because that's going to be where the real battle for them comes. That double header against Atalanta is a really tasty clash, and that's going to be the one that's ultimately going to settle this group. Because I do think United should turn off. Yeah, and again, we say that about United a lot, don't we? They always seem to let us down, but I do think they should have enough to go through in top spot and see what these teams underneath them are capable of. And I think that Atalanta's recent record in the competition suggests that Villarreal will need to be at their very best in order to get through.
I mean, they've two very similar clubs, Villarreal and Atalanta, in that they both overachieve, as you mentioned there with Villarreal. Atalanta overachieving is, I think it's almost underplaying it, considering how well they've done under Gianpiero Gasperini and losing Papu Gomez and still being very good in the Champions League last year, going through the knockout stages. And they do have, as I say, a very smart system of just being able to replace people. They prepare and bring in somebody else way before anybody else has left. So you look at Joachim Mehler, the Danish winger. Now, he wasn't really getting a chance last year, but you know, with the potential for like the likes of Robin Gosens, who are attracting a lot of plaudits and a lot of attention, and maybe he might be departing soon. You know, they bring in somebody like Mehler just to kind of, all right, we'll settle. We've got somebody else that can fill the void. So it's just a very well organized club, as I say, but it's one that, like, almost for the cheesy football fan narrative, they're two clubs that play really good football, play football the right way, and run pretty much the right way and overachieve. So it's a great story for whichever one of them, if they do, can finish in that second place spot or potentially knock off a stumbling Manchester United. It just seems in this group, and look, I don't watch the Swiss Premier League, I'll put my hands up and say that, but it seems that young boys are going to be the whipping boys in Group F. In Group G, Lille, Sevilla, RB Salzburg and Wolfsburg. And as you mentioned straight off the top, Paul, this is a group that's wide open because they're all of a fairly similar standard, you feel, but not in the upper echelon of European football, any of these sides.
I would say that Sevilla are definitely the strongest team in this section. I think that anybody who's been following Lille's... The demise hasn't begun yet for a team that won Liga in less than 2 months ago. But I would say that everyone is expecting the worst for them. And they've lost some players already. They've lost their manager. They've had a pretty poor start to the season. Things aren't going well. There's some debt there. They need to clear that. And they probably might have to sell some more players before the end of the window. We'll see what happens there. I think expectations are pretty much rock bottom in terms of what Lille can do in the Champions League. And I think Sevilla will be rubbing their hands that they've got one of the plum draws from the top seeds, because Sevilla are obviously knockout competition specialists. Obviously more so Europa League than Champions League. But they'll be looking at this group thinking to themselves that they could definitely be finishing top by Christmas time.
Wolfsburg are a bit of a rogue one in this as well, because I've covered them a few times in the last few years, and they're a team that like to press high up the pitch at times. They can be very fast on the counter attack as well, and are aesthetically pleasing side to watch, shall we say. But I still think this just seems like a step too far for a side that haven't really been making an impact in European football for a while, and obviously had a good season in Germany last year, but there's a big gap between the top teams in Germany and everybody else, much like there is in Spain, and I'd probably say a little more drastically so than there is in Spain, which is probably doing a bit of a disservice to some of the sides in the Bundesliga, and come at me for saying that if you want, but yeah, I do think Wolfsburg, perhaps, I think Sevilla and Lille will probably get this done still.
But, you think so?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I know the change at Lille But it might be one where you put all your chips into a Champions League for the French side, and you take the opportunity while you can, because, I mean, how many times are Lille going to get this opportunity? It's like, it's no fear football in Europe compared to, you know, I mean, Wolfsburg, I think, are trying to build for being up and around the top four in Germany more often. But I think Lille will probably appreciate the fact that last year was a really rogue season, much like Montpellier when they won Ligue 1. And they went into the Champions League and didn't do too much, but they played fairly kind of cavalier, right, well, we'll just go for it and see what happens kind of football. And I think in this group, Lille might be able to take that second spot. As you say, Sevilla, certainly the favourites. And again, I don't know too much about the Austrian top division, I have to say, so I'm not going to comment too much about RB Salzburg. But yeah, I'd still say those top two as it stands, just flipped around with Sevilla and Lille as one and two in Group G.
But what we can say, obviously, about Salzburg is obviously they lost Patson Daka to Leicester over the summer, who was their perfect marksman. But they are a club that's no stranger to losing players. Obviously, Minamino in the past, and of course, Haaland, guys like that have moved on, and they've always did well to replace them. So I'm sure that there's other guys in the system that can step up. Lille do still have some great attacking talent. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Obviously, we know Renato Sanchez is injured right now. We don't know how long he's out for. It seems to be, it could be quite a while. But you've still got guys like Jonathan David's got going to have a second season now there. Yilmaz, of course, the veteran. And guys like Timothy Weah. Angel Gomez is actually back there now from a spell on loan in Portugal last season. So there's attacking talent there. But there's just a negative vibe around about the club right now because of everything that's happening in the background. And I would say that I would expect the Sevilla to top the group, and I think there could be no competition between the remaining three teams for that second spot.
Well, it'd be interesting to see. The final group is that Group G that we touched on at the very beginning. Group H, excuse me. Jesus, I can't remember my alphabet right. Sorry, mate. Group H is the final group that we'll touch upon. Then Chelsea, Juventus, Zenit St. Petersburg and Malmo. Juventus... Is it going to be a case for Allegri of never go back? You know, you say it with partners, once it's gone, cut the ties, never go back. But he's come back into the hot seat at Juventus after his incredible tenure at the club previously. And this Juve side looks like they are going to lose Cristiano Ronaldo, which may not be the worst thing in the world, but it may not be the same Juventus side with the same calibre of player in it, I don't think, compared to... They are not head and shoulders above everybody else in Serie A, and they're certainly nowhere near... I think the level that Chelsea have been playing at under Thomas Tuchel, who I bemoan managers coming into football clubs. You know, Pep Guardiola, to me, he plays a great style of football, but he has to spend 100 million every single transfer window to be able to play that. Is that great management, or is that just having the cash in the back pocket? Whereas Thomas Tuchel went into that Chelsea side and got them playing excellent, organised football and thrilling from the word go, pretty much. And they, for me, are one of the favourites, obviously, for the Premier League. That's fairly obvious to say. And for the Champions League as well, without a doubt, it's a really good Chelsea side. They play really good football. And Juventus are looking at second place or nothing. And I think Juventus might be quite lucky that they haven't been tested more with the other two in the group, because otherwise it could be quite a difficult group for them.
Well, you say that, Ollie, that it should be obvious to say that Chelsea and are contenders for the competition. But the bookmakers have got them hovering around about 8.5, 9 to 1 right now.
That's worse.
I think it's going to look really, really silly in a few months' time. The same way that I was speaking to some of my colleagues on football transfers, and we did some predictions for the season, and I couldn't believe that Chelsea were 5 to 1 to win the Premier League. I think City kicked off at like 47 favourites to win the Premier League, and for obvious reasons, they are champions and... Where were the champions at that? But Chelsea are not a 5-1 shot against that City team. Far from it. Particularly one that's just added Lukaku. I mean, are you kidding, man? So I think some of these prices that are flying around Chelsea right now are a bit false. And you talk about coaches, right? And you talk about how coaches can impact the game. And I thought the matches on Sunday there in the Premier League, just to go off a tangent a little bit, where... We're a good example of how a good coach can transform a team. Chelsea are brilliantly coached by a brilliant coach. Man United and Arsenal are not brilliantly coached by not brilliant coaches. Mm. And it's reflected in the patterns of play, in the passing networks that are produced by these teams, and the comfort that the players have got in their positions. Chelsea look a comfortable team in every area of the pitch, and that's just not strictly related to the starting 11. I look at the squad depth, and you look at the bench that Chelsea had at the weekend. It was absolutely insane. But anytime Alonso drops out and Chilwell comes in, or Reece James drops out and maybe Azpilicueta goes to right back, and they bring in even someone like Zuma, Thiago Silva, and at centre back, there's a structure and a setup there that's really quite enviable. And the way that they're playing right now and the way that they're setting up as a team, Tuchel's managing to get this really nice flow and balance whereby it doesn't matter if Havertz drops out and Werner comes in, or if we can play Hudson-Odoi here, or we can play Ziyech here. There is a real harmony and a flow to everything that they're doing within that structure that should be really, really concerning to anybody that comes up against them, because there's not many teams that have got that right now. Like, City are still finding their feet this season. Christ knows what PSG are going to look like with Messi in the team. Like, who even knows what that's going to look like? But it's certainly not going to be very structured when you've got guys like Neymar and Messi not tracking back. I think in terms of a structured outfit, I think Chelsea are the best team in Europe right now, and I think they'll win this group easily. And if they're not in the last four, if not the final of the competition, I'll be very surprised.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the kind of the unknowns with some of those sides. I mean, Manchester City, we still don't know 100%. Seems like it will be happening if Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be there or not, how that will work out. They're still finding their feet. PSG don't know if Mbappe is going to be there or not. Real Madrid in that same boat on the other side of that transfer window. Inter don't really know what's happening with Lautaro Martinez. Bayern Munich have probably got their deals done, you would have thought, and they don't tend to like go out and splash the cash too much too often. Similarly with Barcelona, you'd imagine that they've done their work now in the transfer window, but could be proved wrong. Manchester United, you never really know. There might be a last minute thing, but again, possibly they've got their set squad now for the season. But
On that, mate, I'd be absolutely stunned if United don't try and get a defensive midfielder. That's Scott McTominay just underwent groin surgery today. He's going to be out for a few months, I think, or at least a month anyway, which basically leaves them with what? Matic and Fred as his only two options as the base of midfield, unless he puts Pogba back there, which again, he doesn't really want to do because he knows that that's not Pogba's best position. I'd be absolutely stunned if they don't make a play in the market. Camavinga has been discussed a lot. Yves Bissouma from Brighton. Guys like these have been on the radar for a while. There's still 5-6 days left in the window. I'd be absolutely flabbergasted I'm flabbergasted that they haven't done any business anyway, quite frankly, because anybody who watches that team knows that they need a better player in there. I mean, it's glaringly obvious. And the fact that they haven't solved it is just weird. But I think the McTominay injury could actually do them a favour and force them into action in the market. Maybe they didn't want to go much further in the market in terms of spending, but I think him being out really narrows the options in there. And I think they might go and see if they can sniff about Camavinga again. Or someone like Bissouma. Bissouma is a lot more difficult, I think. Brighton have started the season fantastically well. To get a deal like that done from against another Premier League team at this point, bearing in mind that that's a Premier League team that have already earned $50 million from selling Ben White, they don't need to sell anybody at this point. There's no need for cash. He's the fulcrum of their team. Graham Potter would definitely lose his rag if they sold him at this notice. So that's a really difficult deal to get over the line. Maybe the Camavinga one would be a little bit easier. But I'll be stunned if they don't at least go out there and see what's available, because they're short in that position.
Well, I mean, and there's the continuing rumour and mumble of Declan Rice to every single big club in English football at this point would cost them surely far too much to make that move from West Ham that has been basically on the cards, I think, for like 12 months now. To any major side in, as I say, in English football. But we will see what happens with United. But I just think Chelsea are, going back to my original point, are the most stable and have the highest level of quality running through their squad right now than almost any of these sides in the Champions League, with maybe the exception of Liverpool. Because Liverpool have started this season really brightly. And again, I can't imagine them doing too much business. For Liverpool, it's about getting the key players that they were missing last year back fit, healthy, and ready to play a full season this year. But yeah, I do think there's like Chelsea, I don't know, you said they're longer odds than they should be. I certainly agree with that. And I'd have them favourites for this Group H, and one of my favourites, to be honest, for the Champions League. Lastly, Paulie, just quickly, judging by the groups, who do you think is Give me a name of who's going to win it before we wrap things up.
Like, I know that consecutively winning the tournament is a difficult thing to do. Obviously, Real Madrid have done it. No one else has. So that I guess that is kind of reflected in their higher odds, the fact that it is so difficult to retain it. But yeah, we're totally on the same page when it comes to Chelsea, mate. I mean, that kind of group, to me, suggests that you can rest and rotate and still comfortably cruise through. That's no disrespect to Juventus. I fully expect the games against Juventus to be good ties, but ultimately the other two teams there, we wouldn't really expect them to take much, and that gives you a guaranteed 10-12 points. So you're not really exerting yourself too much in the opening stages of the season. And as you say, even if they want to exert themselves, just bring Ziyech off the bench or Pulisic or any of these guys that are desperate to get minutes. And Pulisic wasn't even in the squad at the weekend because he's injured. He's got COVID. And you looked at that bench and thought, if we'd have flipped those 11 guys on the pitch off and put those on, it's still a hugely strong team. So yeah, obviously you don't write off City and you certainly can't write off PSG. I am going to write off the Spanish challenge this year. I think that Atletico's focus is going to be on retaining La Liga, and I think they're in a very good position to do that. I don't think the Barcelona or Real Madrid are in a position to compete to win this. No way. Sevilla could go deep in it, I think, but not finalists by any stretch. So I think that Chelsea, to me, just looked like an all-round package. And yeah, I might go and see if that 91 is still available, because I don't think it's going to be available for long.
Big thanks to Paul, as always, for guiding me through the Champions League draw and breaking down some of the biggest talking points from the draw and what to look forward to in the competition this year. Remember, you can follow us at WFH_podcast. That's at WFH_podcast. Get onto Spotify or Anchor.fm, our host, or wherever you find your podcasts as well, to subscribe to the podcast and give us a review, give us a couple of comments in the feedback. We'd love to know your thoughts, of course, on world football. But until the next time, big thanks for listening and take care.